eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Qué Golazo. Today on the show, we are giving you the weekend preview. Man City against Arsenal, Everton against Liverpool, the Milan Derby. We're going to give you analysis and betting tips on the best games that you can gamble on. We'll also talk about the Golden Boy shortlist, and we will answer your questions. We have James Bench and, of course, Jimmy Conrad all coming up on this episode of Qué Golazo. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody, welcome back. We are here with Jimmy Conrad and James Bench, his first episode with us, the insider of CBS, writer and HQ talent extraordinaire, James Bench from London. Welcome to Qué Golazo Pod. How are you, bud?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. It's a bit late at night out here in London, but I'm getting hyped for a future of late night pods, evenings spent with you. Maybe with a few beers sometimes, although you guys should be working right now.
You make it sound so romantic, James. Oh, yeah. Bench. James Bench, also a very big Arsenal insider. We're going to have a lot to talk about. But what now? Let's talk about the weekend preview. Jimmy C, so much to talk about. We will begin with the Premier League and some big games, Man City, Arsenal, of course. And we also have Liverpool against Everton, the Merseyside Derby. And, you know, so many more to talk about. Let's set the scene, Jimmy. Talk to us. Betting tips, gambling advice. Give it to us.
Yeah, as you guys know, or maybe if you don't, I'm going to let you know right now. I'm the wagering analyst for CBS Sports, okay? So I put on my trunks and I go swim in the warm waters over at William Hill and I look for some good odds for you guys, okay? Now, everybody has some ideas about what they want. Their heart's telling them something. You guys go ahead and bet that. That's fine. I'm just going to give you some other things to look at for your consideration if you want to actually make some money, because I know what I'm doing. Look at this face and hair, right? I got it all figured out. So if we talk about Everton versus Liverpool, what's interesting about this game in particular is that Everton haven't beaten Liverpool since 2010. We could argue they're due. And with Everton absolutely balling out right now, maybe it would have been better if they had played prior to the international break. Maybe they've lost some of that momentum, but I do like a few of their lines. If you want Everton to win straight up, it's plus 285. So if you bet 100, you can win 285 if Everton wins straight up. I don't know if that's going to happen because Liverpool are pretty good, even though we could argue the back line has been a little shaky. Virgil van Dijk, both for club and country, hasn't really been Virgil van Dijk that we know and love. The draw, though, is plus 290. I think that's great value. You could get them to draw 1-1, 2-2, plus 290. I might be investing some of my own money there. Hamas to get an assist at any point during the game, plus 200. I love that one a lot. And then Calvert-Lewin, he scored the first goal for Everton in their four league games. So four straight games, he scored the first goal for them. If you want to bet him to do that again in this one, it's plus 450. And if you want him to score any time, plus 125, he's coming off scoring his first goal for England. He's super hot. Those are the odds that I like in that particular game. Now let's move over to Arsenal versus Manchester City. They're traveling, Arsenal, the Gunners, over to the Etihad. What I like about this one, I know for all you Gunners fans out there, you're like, please don't pick my team, because when Jimmy picks my team, they lose. That might be true. But in this one, I think it's going to be different because Manchester City probably don't have Kevin De Bruyne, who apparently is going to be out. Raheem Sterling's going to be out. Jesus is out. Aguero's out. They're going to be lacking. Now, we look at their depth. They got Mahrez, Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden. It must be nice to be Manchester City. But I like Arsenal to do the business. If you want them to win straight up, which I think they're going to do 2-1, if you're not asking, well, I'm telling you whether you want to know or not, plus 550 for that. But if you're thinking, okay, maybe a draw, plus 375, again, I think is great value for that one. I think Arsenal in their front three with Willian, Lacazette, and Aubameyang. Is Partey going to play? Yes, he probably will. I hope he does. I think that will really be a big boost for the team. And I just like him to do well. Also, I got Granit Xhaka getting a yellow card. And that's plus 150. I mean, you got it. That's like, that's like printing money for you over at William Hill if you want to bet Xhaka getting a yellow card plus 150. Also, as a flyer in this one, I like this one a lot. Aubameyang to score, Arsenal to win, and both teams to score plus 1,000. Yeah, you can thank me later, and so can your 401k once you hit that one. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on. And then I'll just go to the Milan Derby. Oh, you know what? We're staying with Premier League, right? Let's just stick with the Premier League. But those are my two games that I think have some good action.
Jimmy, see, with the gambling wagering tips, absolutely amazing. We might hit another game before we move on to another league. But, Bench, let's start with the Merseyside Derby. You know, as Jimmy mentioned, first of all, James to get an assist anytime in this game. I like that. That's a good one right there. But let's focus on the game itself. Liverpool coming off a 7-2 loss against the greatest team in the planet, Aston Villa. And now they're facing their Merseyside rivals in Everton. Carlo Ancelotti has them clicking. DCL up front doing so well. James clicking everything. The team just looks good. They look confident. They look ready. What do you see here?
I do see an Everton team that looks like all that, but I don't quite buy it yet. I don't know what it is. I think sometimes we make these decisions early on before the season, a ball's been kicked, but you still need to see a lot of evidence to change your mind. I look at this team and I think, you know, when it gets really rigorous in English football, is it a bit old? Is it a bit slow? Is it a bit one note? I mean, I could be proven wrong. And I think the person, you mentioned him there, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, for me, is the difference between Everton being an okay team and Everton being a great team right now, just because he's got a bit of everything. He's a target man by build, but he's got the mobility of a true centre forward. His goal-scoring instincts are phenomenal. I don't really think at the moment he's necessarily on an unsustainable hot streak. He's just getting in good positions and scoring good goals. Him and Richarlison, that's a great combination. And as you say, James, we'll see. How does he hold up over a 38-game season plus an FA Cup? I've got my doubts. He's obviously spent a lot of years playing a supporting role, but right now he just looks remarkable. This is the player that we all fell in love with in 2014. And it is great to see him in a starring role with this Everton team that looks like it's going places. It'll be a while before I pick them to beat a Liverpool team, no matter what state that Liverpool team is in. But Everton, I'm not there yet, but I can totally see why other people are.
Bench, let's talk about their midfield, though. They upgraded. Alan is going to be back in the team. Andre Gomez is fully fit and ready to go. Decore was such a great signing from Watford. That three that's protecting a back four, which we could argue might have some vulnerabilities there. Mm-hmm. And then you have the confidence of Calvert-Lewin. You have Richarlison, who already has a ton of confidence. And then you got James. That front six is solid. You know, for me, I think it's, can they manage that back four? Is Pickford the guy that's really going to take them to that next level? Lucas Digne might be out, which would be a big loss for them on the left side because he bombs four and he's very good at picking spots of when to go and when to stay. So I don't know. There's some issues there. Seamus Coleman might be injured as well. And obviously he was the last player to ever play for Everton that beat Liverpool back in 2010. He's the last person standing. So yeah, I think I have some questions, but there's so much to be excited about with this team. And then you throw in the fact that Liverpool, Alisson's not going to start. Adrian's going to be in goal. He just shipped seven against Villa, as Luis said. So I don't know. Liverpool doesn't look like the Liverpool that just won the Premier League and won the Champions League the season before that.
So here's a question. Let's focus now on Liverpool. A lot of Everton, I agree. I think that we still have to wait and see if this is really Carlo Ancelotti's ultimate package. I mean, listen, I did a crazy prediction at the beginning of the season. I said that they're going to make it to the Champions League. So hold me that till I die. Let's see what happens. But let's talk about Liverpool. All right. Yes, they lost 7-2. It was absolutely incredible to see. But is this an opportunity, Bench, for Jurgen Klopp to say to this team, wake up. You're the defending champion. Wake up, because this is not a given. I know that there are challenges. You're coming off an international break. What can you do? Wake up. I think that Jimmy brings a good point about Adrian at the back. You know, just so shaky compared to the, you know, comparable wall that is Alisson, you know, who really is just arguably, you know, the best goalkeeper in the league. What can Liverpool do to make sure that they don't lose, and especially lose badly?
not really worry about it. I mean, that Villa game was remarkable. But it was stupid. It just doesn't really happen. It's a game that has no right to exist. And I'd seen that Liverpool team in the flesh 6 days before against Arsenal. And my God, they looked as good as they've ever looked. The pressing was remorseless. In particular, you know, Wijnaldum, Mane scares the life out of opposing defenders. And I almost think that they kind of need to re-embrace that. I think when Liverpool have been a bit disappointing is when they've been a bit passive. And against Villa, my God, there was no press at all. They had the high line and no one at the top pressing up. So having Mane, I don't know if he's back. I think Sadio Mane's back. Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
There is a training boost news of him that he should be back. He might be even preferred to Mohamed Salah in that line. But he might return as Thiago Alcantara as well.
He's the one that triggers that press. And this Liverpool team, their most important defenders are Firmino and Mane. It's not Van Dijk, even. It's not, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's about setting that energy from the front. And going back to what we were talking about, you press the life out of that Everton defence. Every time Jordan Pickford has the ball, you terrify him. Because the thing with Pickford as well, sorry to go back onto Everton, is he wants to do the right thing. He wants to pass through that press. So I think having Mane back will be a huge boost. In spite of all the plaudits that go his way and Liverpool's way, I think he's vastly underrated by the football world. And with him, they press and everything comes down to getting that press right.
Jimmy, the last thing to mention on this game, and we'll move on, is the fact that we have to remember that a lot of international players are coming back, especially South Americans. I mean, there's a lot here. A lot of players who just are coming from, you know, a continent where they just played World Cup qualifiers, intense World Cup qualifiers, and now they're being asked to play in this huge game. Is that a factor?
I think it is, but I think a lot of these players are used to it. They understand what it takes. They're also not flying coach. You know, they're not sitting in middle seats. They probably can sleep on their private jets on the way back. So, yeah, there is a time change thing. And there's fatigue that has to be taken into consideration, but you know, it's not like they're suffering in some ways on their trips there and back. And they have the benefit of super nutritionists and all these people that are taking care of all their vitals and making sure that they're eating right and sleeping right. So they're almost like robots in some ways. I don't worry about them too much, but yes, it does catch up to you. Maybe not right away, but in the 60th minute, you might feel your legs a little bit. I feel like a game of this magnitude and what it means to both clubs, you find a way to fight through it. But yeah, I think it's valid. I think it's worth speaking about, but ultimately I think both teams are going to have to suffer from it. They have a couple players on each team that went back or traveled far distances to play for their national team. So I don't know if any one team has an advantage one way or the other.
Liverpool Everton is the early game on Saturday. Make sure that you tune in and see if Jimmy C's betting tips helped you out. Let's move on to Man City against Arsenal. Some analysis here. The former student against the former professor, Mikel Arteta, faces Pep Guardiola. This should be a good one. Jimmy mentioned a few injuries. What are we looking here? Benj, you know Arsenal, this Arsenal team so well. What are you looking in this game?
Two big players to keep your eye out on. Of course, we mentioned him, Thomas Partey, £45 million signing and a hugely significant £45 million signing where the Cronkies put their own money into the club to pay for Partey's release clause, which was paid in full. It's a major commitment, and clearly it's a sign that Partey's the man they want. I think he goes into the starting 11. That's the early intel that he probably will start from the off, so long as his two training sessions go to plan. The other one to keep an eye out on, and this guy is so important to how Arsenal play, Kieran Tierney, Scottish left-back slash centre-back, because he plays a strange role in the back three, where when Arsenal are in possession, he functions almost as a wing-back and he's a centre-back out of possession, loves to bomb on. Now, he is a victim of the very strange COVID regulations in Scotland, whereby he was in close proximity to one of his teammates who picked up COVID. And even though he has antibodies in his system and tested negative on three occasions, as things stand, he won't be playing. And that will be a massive blow for Arteta. I don't know whether he would stick with the back three and bring Gabriel Magalhaes in as the left-sided centre-back or Sead Kolasinac, who is a walking yellow card, much like Granit Xhaka. I will be taking that money. Thank you, Jimmy. I'm having that free money. If those two are there, then I like Arsenal's ability to defend against a weakened City. If not, then you start introducing some of these calamity Arsenal defenders. You look at a midfield of Xhaka and Ceballos can do the job. We saw that in the FA Cup final when Arsenal were excellent. But Partey is the man for games like this. This is why you pay. In it, you know, people hear 45 million and they go, oh, it's not that much. Arsenal have spent more. But to pay it in one go is huge for a club in this current circumstances. It's not happening. Gabriel, who I mentioned earlier, Arsenal paid 5 million of 25 million so far. Partey's huge. I think he plays, and I think he could be a real difference maker, even in game one.
What do you think, Jimmy? I mean, the big thing that you told me here that I keep just thinking about, I agree with Benj. I think Thomas Partey is going to be a big one. I continue to think about this depleted offensive, trio from Manchester City, and that's somewhere where Mikel Arteta can take advantage. What do you think?
I get the sense that Pep's going to fall back to his false nine. He's going to put somebody up there that probably doesn't fit as a nine in general. Maybe it's Phil Foden who's going to drop in and try to create triangles and numerical advantages in the middle of the midfield and see who can bomb forward or make runs late and have to keep the center backs for Arsenal paying attention, which if you got David Luiz in there, I don't know. You're rolling the dice with that dude. You never know where if he's going to get sucked into midfield, it's going to open up gaps for Man City's players to run into. He's not the most patient of defenders because that's not where his instincts lie. I am interested that Sterling, I guess, is on the fence. Maybe he'll start, maybe he won't. Gundogan can come back into the team. So that will help and give him some options. I'm curious to see about Ruben Diaz, who's going to, probably start next to Laporte in the middle of defense. So there are a couple of things that I'm excited about, but yes, they don't have their normal weapons. And if De Bruyne is out, that is going to hurt them a lot. Sterling, obviously, and then no Jesus, no Aguero, none of their normal pieces that they normally have in terms of how they prepare and how they move as a group in the normal spot. So yes, they have talented guys that can hold on to the ball and they probably will have more possession than Arsenal. But I worry about that kind of finishing touch they need, or can they get deep enough into that final third to really trouble Arsenal again, though, with some of the center backs that Ben mentioned. It's more than possible that can happen and they can be exploited. It'll be interesting to see where Xhaka kind of lines up off the shoulder of Partey or who does what within those roles. Obviously, Ceballos is going to be a little bit higher, but who's going to sit and who's going to actually run and be a little bit more box to box. Xhaka seems to want to do that all the time. I feel like he's a closet number 10, right? He thinks he's a string puller when he's really not. And sometimes that gets the better of him, but I don't know. It's going to be an interesting game. That said, Benj made a great point about Sadio Mane. I agree with him that he's super undervalued. And I feel like Aubameyang, for whatever reason, even though he scores a ton of goals, the guy lives for the big moments. He loves big games. And for whatever reason, I don't think he's appreciated like he should be. Lacazette, he's kind of hit or miss. So he could score the odd goal and then he won't see him for 80 minutes. But then, he bangs in this one top corner. You're like, all right, I understand why they got him. And then you got Willian, who I think, he's scored big goals for Chelsea in the past. You got Pepe coming off the bench potentially. And there's just options. And I really like what Arteta's put together. And he's got a team that can compete and can hold their own with anybody. And I that's why I really like Arsenal to get a result of some kind in this one.
To your point about Man City and Ruben Diaz, I think the other issue is that I think Guardiola is trying to fix this puzzle at the back. He still hasn't figured it out, and that could be the advantage of Arsenal. Man City against Arsenal is 12:30 Eastern, 5:30 local time on Saturday. Another big game. Is there any other game here in the Premier League, Jimmy, that we could be thinking about?
Well, we've talked about a few derbies, right? We have the Merseyside derby. We have the Pep Guardiola against his former assistant derby. There's a United derby, Newcastle versus Manchester United. This is the one where I don't know what's going to happen because Newcastle can surprise you. They just signed Alan Saint-Maximin for 6 years, though I think it's just to get a better transfer fee. He's going to probably be sold in January anyway. So he's doing Mike Ashley and sports director. Nice big favor there. Manchester United, Ole Gunnar. Like, I just feel like things are all over the place. Harry Maguire's 2020 continues to be dog poop after he got two yellows in one half, most recently for England in the UEFA Nations League. I just feel like they're all over the place. He's the leader of the team. He hasn't acted like a leader in a lot of different ways this season. And I think that's kind of been a ripple effect. That's not all on him, of course, but there's just, and then De Gea gave up one shot against Ukraine. That was a goal. De Gea being De Gea again, for all the world-class saves, it's those bad ones that we always remember. So I don't know. It's interesting. This one's a toss up. There's good value on Newcastle winning straight up. It's plus 400. If you just want to take him, I wouldn't mind throwing a flyer on that because if Manchester United doesn't get a penalty and VAR doesn't rule in their favor like they did all last season, it's more than possible that Joel Linton could potentially hit, put a shot on goal and it could potentially go in. I don't know. Newcastle's got a lot of question marks, but it should be an interesting game for a lot of different reasons. And we'll see how legit this Newcastle team can be, though. I feel like they're going to be at home and concede 85% possession because that's what they do. And it pisses me off because I'm a Newcastle fan, but that's a different conversation, guys. Bench, take it away.
Before Bench says anything, remember that Edinson Cavani is not available for this and Anthony Martial is suspended. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has a real dilemma up top. Bench, what do you see here?
I do see Newcastle having about 15% possession and boring me to tears on their
way. Just stealing that 1-0 win, right?
But then I really like what they could do on the counter. Ryan Fraser is a great pickup, although he's not quite there yet. He's obviously not going to be because his final season at Bournemouth, he was just phoning it in, waiting for the free transfer. Callum Wilson as well, you know, he's one of those one shot, one goal. And look, that Man United defence, as Jimmy says, that is there to be got at. I know we were speaking in our unofficial pre-record pod, Luis. So actually, I don't know why I'm saying this because I don't need to. But I said that Harry Maguire had so consistently been described as overrated that he is now underrated. I do think we need to reassess that view. He is almost unplayable at the moment. Obviously, there is clearly those issues that are happening off the pitch are clearly affecting him in some way. His head is not in the game. And when his head isn't in the game, because pretty much all he can do is head the ball at the moment, he's a complete liability. But then I don't know which other centre-back would I put next to him. Man United still don't have a left-footer in defence. Luke Shaw, Alex Tellez, I'm not crazy about any of them. Wan-Bissaka is the only good defender, I think, in the whole squad. So I think if Steve Bruce were to break the habit of a lifetime and try and beat Man United, they might actually have quite a good chance.
Well, Newcastle have won 2 of their last 3 Premier League home games against Manchester United, more than they had in their previous 13 against them at St. James's Park. This is the first time Newcastle are facing Man U in a Premier League game while above them in the table since December 2013. Things are pointing in so many directions here. I just see this as an ugly, ugly game with a 1-0 result. I just don't know what else to tell you about this one. Let's move on. Let's go to a big game. A big game. We're leaving England. We're going to Italy. Serie A. A massive game. AC Milan, Inter Milan, the Milan Derby. AC Milan has started well, undefeated, 3 wins. Inter Milan is looking to come back, but they're such a good team. So many players. What do you have here? Betting tips wise, Jimmy C.
Yeah, this is a great game for a lot of different reasons. As you mentioned, Milan is undefeated this season, but the teams they played, I don't know, Bologna, Crotone, Spezia, like they're not going to blow anybody away. Whereas with Inter, who've given up 6 goals, but are undefeated, they have 2 wins and a draw. They took on Fiorentina. They came back and won that one 4-3. They beat Benevento 5-2. So they're banging in a lot of goals. And they finally played somebody, I think, that's a little bit more their level with Lazio. And that one was a 1-1 draw. Both teams got a red card in that. I think Inter's the better team, but they got Zlatan on Milan. The guy loves scoring in big games. I think he'll do it again. The last time these two teams played, it was 4-2. Milan went up 2-0. And then Inter scored 4 goals in the second half. And that's really important for you guys to know because it informs my bets. Okay, so what I really like, Inter to win and the over 2.5 goals is plus 220. I like that one a lot. And then if they draw in the first half, I could see like a 1-1 in the first half and Inter win the second half. That's plus 430. I really like that one a lot. If you want Zlatan to score anytime, plus 105. Lukaku to score anytime, plus 110. That guy's on fire. And then Lautaro Martinez, who also coming back with a lot of confidence after scoring for Argentina, plus 145 to score anytime. So those are the bets that I'm looking at right now. And yeah, I have some other stuff written down. But with regard to William Hill and where I get all the odds, that's what it's looking like.
Yeah, well, Bench, Inter Milan has won their last 4 Serie A games against Milan. And the only streak that's longer than that is the 5 in a row, which was way back, 79-83, I believe. So that's a long time ago. So you could see, as Jimmy said, yes, AC Milan have started undefeated. They're looking good. Maybe Zlatan coming back, but they've played some weaker opposition. And Inter Milan with Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, so many pieces. You could see this going the way of Inter, what do you see it as, Benj?
I mean, the two things I'm looking forward to are both in the Inter team, one at the front, one at the back. As Jimmy was saying, man, Romelu Lukaku, over the last few months, it's a joy to see this player. He is everything one would want from a striker. And I think we, particularly in England, a lot of people were guilty of seeing a player of his shape, of his size, and going, he's a target man. Nothing like a target man at all. I'm sure he can play that if you need him. But when you have him in a front two, like he's in with Lautaro, and he's free to drift out wide and attack those fullbacks, attack the defenders on the flank, he is terrifying. That was the same against England. England had three centre-backs to deal with Lukaku. And they couldn't. The whole half an hour where Lukaku was just doing whatever he wanted. Having said that, if I were AC Milan and I was looking for a reason to hope, seems like Inter are a little bit light on defensive options. Milan Skriniar's a doubt. Bastoni as well, who looks like the future of Italian centre-backs, the next great Italian centre-back. So maybe there's going to be some weaker defenders there for Zlatan to gang up on. I'm not one for the cult of Ibrahimovic, but in the big games, he always turns up, and I'd be looking forward to seeing what he has to do against a defence that's there to be got at. I feel like we might be getting goals there with Lukaku and Martinez at the other end as well.
Well, to that point, with all the attack, with all the offensive firepower of Inter Milan, right, have not conceded in the last four games. So something has to give, Jimmy. There is a game to be had here. What a fantastic matchup. Anything else with this derby?
No, I was just going to say that Antonio Conte would be the first manager in Inter history to beat Milan in his first three attempts. So that would be a big deal for him. Obviously, he's very competitive. I think that's very clear when he's stuck on the sidelines. But to further Benja's point about Lukaku, I just feel like he's grown a lot. And I think getting out of Manchester United has changed him in his approach. I feel like he's turning half chances into goals. Whereas before, I think he'd squander those chances. He's now burying them. And I don't think he hesitates anymore. He gets in the box and he knows exactly what he wants to do. He's not trying to take that extra perfect touch to set up the shot. He just gets it out of his feet and fires it. And he's scoring a ton of goals. And I think as he continues to do that, his confidence grows. And then when you have a strike partner like Lautaro Martinez, who can stretch the defense in a different way, it allows more pockets of space to open up for Lukaku to exploit or to back up the center back. I love when he like basically makes himself as big as possible, backs up, and you're like, there's nothing a defender can do. As a former center back, you're stuck. Whether the guy's bigger than you or not, if he's got that angle and positioning on you, you're in trouble, and that allows pockets of space. I do want to also add that Nico Barella is a fantastic player. He's one of my favorite young players in the world, 23-year-old midfielder for Inter. I thought he was fantastic for Italy during this UEFA Nations League break, and I think he's just a player to watch, and he's been a good link-up player for those two guys in particular. I like Inter to do the business here. I agree with Benj, though. There are some weaknesses defensively due to some losses. I do like the matchup, though, of Hakimi versus Theo Hernandez. I think that's going to be a really fun one to watch. On the right side, Hakimi will be on the right, and Theo Hernandez will be on the left. They're just going to be bombing forward, back and forth at each other. And I really, like, for all the purists out there that, like, kind of love the subtlety and nuance of the game, watching those two guys get after it, who take some big risks when they go forward and take some chances, and then who's going to defend and who's going to stay, should be really interesting to watch.
Well, the Derby de la Madonnina is on noon on Saturday. It's going to be your lunchtime game. What a game, what a game. But let's move now from Italy and wrap things up with this weekend preview to the Scottish Premiership. And we have the Old Firm. This is a good game. When I'm looking at the table right here, I see Rangers with 26 points, Celtic with 25. Obviously, there's top two in Scotland. Jimmy, what do you have for us in this game? What a game.
Well, overall, I would like to see Rangers win. I'm not picking one side or the other. I just felt Celtic's been so dominant. They're like the Juventus or Bayern Munich of Scotland. It'd just be nice to see another team emerge. And I know it's their big rivals, but it'd be kind of cool to see Stevie G, and Steven Gerrard, he's managing the team now, to see them push on and actually put Celtic under a little bit of pressure. And I think that would actually elevate Celtic in a lot of different ways, since they had a true competitor again. Right now, just the basic line, you know, Celtic to win straight up is plus 150. Rangers is plus 170. The draw is plus 240. You just flip a coin with these guys. I feel like no matter their current form, this game is just different. The Old Firm is something special. It's a game that I want to go to one day and see. Now, they both have some injuries and some COVID-related issues as well for their squads, so it'll be interesting to see who they roll out. But I will say this is the one fun fact that I think is really interesting about this game in particular, is that the team that wins the first Old Firm of the season usually goes on to win the league. Of the last 30 years, if you lost the first Old Firm, you only went on to win it five times. So that is massive. And for Rangers in particular, they really need to put their stamp on things and win this one and put Celtic under some pressure, because it does create that distance, give them that cushion. Now, Celtic, I think overall, will still probably find a way to win the title, but I'm trying to give Rangers a chance here.
If you are a Colombian fan, watch out for Alfredo Morelos, who should be fit as he returns from his Colombian duties bench. Any thoughts on the Old Firm?
I feel like this is going to be one of the strangest games to have behind closed doors. Unlike, I've been lucky enough to attend one Old Firm. It was one of my first football games ever, and it is like, it was at Celtic Park. It was like nothing you've ever seen before. One of the most hostile grounds to the visiting teams. It's going to be really special. I know that a lot of listeners and viewers in the States may not watch Scottish football week in, week out, and probably think it's a poor cousin of English football. There's a degree of truth in that, but there are some excellent players on both teams. You mentioned Morelos, similarly Ryan Kent, the winger at Rangers, and Odson Edouard. I'm not sure, he has a potential COVID issue, I think. But if he's playing as well, those two are fantastic. And Celtic and Rangers have really been smart of late, picking up those players at an early age. Sometimes they sell them on for big money, like Van Dijk, like Tierney, like Wanyama. You are seeing stars of the future in these teams here. So keep an eye on it. It's an incredible game. And I'm sure even without the fans there, these two groups of players hate each other enough that it'll be electric.
Oh, it's going to be popping off. I agree with you. And what I wanted to say was, with regard to the marketing of the Scottish Premiership, I don't understand why they would have the game kick off at the same exact time as Everton Liverpool. Like, that defies logic for me. If you're trying to grow your business and you're trying to grow your league, why would you ever, I would look at the schedule and be like, all right, we're going to put it at a different time, so we're not competing directly with a game that everybody's going to be watching, or a good portion of people are going to be watching, especially in the States too. That I find very interesting. And even if they say, hey, well, the Premier League came in after us, and I would switch the time. Like, if you got there first and the Premier League took that time, then switch the time and find a different time to do it so that you have as many people. Because I would love to watch that game, but I'm a little bit more drawn to Everton-Liverpool. And that feels unfortunate because of all the things that you mentioned, Benj.
Well, I just feel sorry for any spouse this weekend and, you know, who doesn't like the game and they have to follow their soccer-related spouse watching all these games. Unbelievable. Great weekend preview. Thank you so much for that, chaps. Welcome back, everybody. And now we are talking about the Golden Boy 2020 shortlist. It's the final 20 nominations for the annual prize, which is distributed by the Italian newspaper Tutto Sport, and they've been confirmed. And the final results come out in December 14. There's some great names here, fellas. I mean, obviously, Erling Haaland, Alphonso Davies, Eduardo Camavinga, Serginho Dest, Ansu Fati, Phil Foden. It's like the best fantasy lineup under 21. It's just unbelievable. Any thoughts on, obviously, the favorites? I know that I have some, but also like people that people may not know about. Dominik Szoboszlai, the Hungarian attacking midfielder. I love that guy so much. So many great players. Benj, let's begin with you. Anything that sticks out with this shortlist? I mean, it's tremendous.
It is tremendous. It's tremendous if you're English. We have five of the 20.
Wow.
No other nation has more than two. And I mean, I could wax lyrical about Bukayo Saka for ages, and I'm going to. A really exceptional young footballer who's already excelled at left back, at left winger, is developing into a fine central midfielder, has brilliant GCSEs. For American listeners, that's the equivalent of, I don't know, some sort of pre-SAT thing. But I mean, the kid could probably go to Oxford or Cambridge if he wasn't an amazing footballer. But I don't know, I look at this list, there are some incredible talents, and yet I just look at it and I go, well, Erling Haaland's going to win it, isn't he? It feels like there should be a debate, but we've witnessed a really exceptional coming-of-age season from a young player. So I'm looking at it, I love names like Camavinga. Davies has been a key part of the best team in Europe, but like, I'm picking Erling Haaland. The guy's the Terminator of football. Amazing. And I mean, they don't always live up to the hype, the Golden Boys, but this one's going to.
I'm going to agree with you. I think Erling Haaland. But Jimmy, there's also some American talent here and some other names worth mentioning. What do you think?
Well, I would want to give a shout out to our North American counterparts, Alphonso Davies. I think what doesn't get talked about a lot is that they spent the season before $80 million on Lucas Hernandez, and he doesn't even play because Alphonso Davies has really emerged as the guy. And that's a big deal. And I think that that should merit more of that. However, he does play on one of the best teams in all of Europe, if not the best team in Europe. So there's a lot of guys ahead of him that that make him look good as well. He probably doesn't have to defend as truthfully as he might need to with if he played for another club, because they usually have a lot of the ball. So it'll be interesting to see how his career progresses, because I still think when people look at his game, he's not a defender by trade. So he's got a lot to learn on that side of it, but he's a quick learner, super smart. And I love his game. I think Erling Haaland, I think what's cool about him is that he was doing it for RB Salzburg. And then he transitioned to Dortmund and just continued to do it. And then he's like, I'll play for my national team and just continue to do it. So there's really no knock. There's no drop off at any point where you can kind of point to something and say, well, he didn't play well for 3 months here. No, the guy's been great throughout. So that's going to be pretty tough. And I think he's going to overshadow Jadon Sancho, who's obviously a very good player as well. I throw Camavinga in there. I'm a big fan of him. Ansu Fati, I think, deserves a shout. Maybe he's emerged a little bit too late in terms of like the whole progression of the calendar, but it's clear this season without Suarez, without Vidal, without some of these Barcelona mainstays that have moved on, that Messi has to rely on him, and he's proving to be the goods. So I'm really excited to see Ansu Fati's career as well.
Yeah, this list is ridiculous. I agree. I think Erling Haaland is going to lead the way. Some amazing names both of you has mentioned. It's kind of crazy, actually, that we also forget about players like Vinicius Jr. Just because we are so aware and familiar of that name, we forget that he's still so young and he's done so much in his career so far with Real Madrid. I want you to pay attention. Go on YouTube later on, guys, and just watch Ryan Gravenberch, 18-year-old Ajax midfielder. This guy... his technical ability is just, he's 18 years old. And it's just so beautiful to watch, but what a list. I agree. I think
Luis, just to jump in, he reminds me of me. I'm just going to throw that out there. Nice.
He's the Dutch Jimmy Conrad.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Can we cut that out and put that somewhere? That's great. Thank you very much.
That'll be your drop every time. Now the American Ryan Gravenberch, the American version of Ryan Gravenberch. I never thought I'd compare you to Ryan Gravenberch, but here we are doing it. Absolutely.
I
love it. But what a list. But guys, you tell us, Qué Golazo Pod, send some comments, questions, maybe show in a video and show us who do you think should win it? I mean, Erling Haaland clearly leads, but there's some great, great, great names. And the results are on December 14th. Such a great loaded episode. We have a few more things to talk about before we say goodbye to Jane's bench, because it's getting late over there and he needs his beauty sleep. Talk to us, James, about something that's been going on in England, in the Premier League, in the EFL, that kind of came and went, but it's definitely left an ongoing theme, right? Talk to us about the Project Big Picture.
Right. So on Sunday, news emerged from the Daily Telegraph of a document that was being put together predominantly by Liverpool and Manchester United that proposed the most significant reform of the Premier League since its formation in 1992. The key issues here is most of all that the Premier League would have been reduced from 20 teams to 18, which is one of the reasons why it failed. We would have seen the abolition of the League Cup. Significantly more money would have gone to the EFL and gone to grassroots courses and the FA. However, the price for that was that the Big Six and the three other longest serving Premier League teams, which in this instance would have been West Ham, Southampton and Everton, would have had enhanced voting rights. Now, the view of Liverpool and Manchester United is we're the sort of clubs that the Premier League product is all about. You know, when we're talking on Qué Golazo, we're not talking about Huddersfield Town. We're not talking about Burnley. Those proposals were discussed at the Premier League meeting on Thursday and were roundly rejected unanimously. So Manchester United and Liverpool rejected their own plan because they were acutely aware that it wouldn't go through. However, they have the backing of the EFL, largely because the EFL look at this plan and say, well, look, we know that we're stacking the deck in the top flight in favour of the Big Six, but we're going to have to accept that to make it through this coronavirus winter. These clubs are playing behind closed doors, very minimal revenue. It's only the only revenue they're getting is from streaming services. And they think, actually, we might have to make the deal with the devil. Otherwise, we might not make it to the end of this season. And so before the Premier League meeting, the EFL agreed near unanimously. There's been some debate as to how united they were over the plan. The plan may be dead in the water in its current format, but this is part of a long process that is really about consolidating power with these big six clubs. For those of you that don't know who I mean, Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, Tottenham, Chelsea, and Arsenal. We've seen this before with overseas broadcasting rights. There's been big debates over that. They want to play more Champions League games, more European involvement, and that is the direction we are heading. We're now looking at talks as well of an independent body to oversee football regulation, because what's quite clear is something needs to happen. Clubs are coming here with proposals, but there's this uniquely English idea that we'll see that there's a need for change, but we can't agree on anything because it means abandoning traditions. We couldn't get rid of our FA Cup replays, our League Cup and Community Shield, lower tier competitions. So this is not the end. It's the end of Project Big Picture in its current form, but basically what Liverpool and Man United have done here is set the terms of debate. So they probably will not get their control of the league as they want it, but we're heading in one direction.
So Benj, my question for you is, it seems like they tried to put something out there that they could ultimately work with, that they maybe if they swung too hard, they're like, oh yeah, well, just bring it back a little bit. Mm. And then there, they could find that happy medium there. Do you think that was thought out? Do you think that was done on purpose so that they could end up finding a middle ground that could maybe satisfy more people? They were just trying to plant the seed that, hey, maybe think about the world like this, and then they could try to find that the happy place.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, look, what we saw was not a finished document. It was not a proposal that went out to the Premier League clubs, and you know, clubs I've spoken to away from the Big Six have said this was the first we'd heard about it. It was when it leaked in the newspaper. So obviously they wanted to present this in a slightly different way, I'm sure. But yeah, this is about saying, okay, look, this is what we want. You tell us what you want and let's compromise in the middle. I don't really see the enhanced voting rights and the Big Six having an effective power of veto. I don't see that flying, but I think that eventually they will be able to talk other clubs round and say, look, you've got to give us something because we're the people that are making you the money. There was one really interesting proposal as well, was in the next broadcasting rights round, that clubs would be able to stream their own games or 8 games on their own website, which is really interesting because if I'm a Liverpool fan in the States, well, there are Liverpool fans in the States, and they'll pay $15 to watch a game on their website. I mean, how many Burnley fans are there that will do the same? Sorry to pick on Burnley, but you know what I mean. And I think that these are the conversations they're going to start foisting on people. It's the same as we've got with the start of pay-per-view in the Premier League this weekend. The Big Six know that they are the people that you guys in the States, in China, around the world are tuning into view. And we even heard conversations they might break away. I don't think that was ever really on the cards, but they're certainly going to want other clubs to believe that the nuclear option is out there and ready to be hit.
I think a good way of describing it, as you mentioned, is making the deal with the devil as he helps you get up, I guess. An ongoing theme and an ongoing problem due to COVID-19. James Benj, CBS Insider writer, thank you so much for being part of episode 2. And we will see you very soon, my friend.
See you soon.
Well, everybody, we're wrapping up things here with your questions. Thank you so much for sending them. Gego Lasso Pod on Twitter. Also, video them, please. Send me some video. We want to put them on YouTube, guys. All right. And make sure that you write a rating, a review, and more on questions. Thank you so much. This one coming in from Alex Calado. Apologies if I'm saying your last name wrong. Thank you so much. And it was a conversation that Jimmy and myself were having about Neymar. He says, fan from Portugal here, loved the energy. Thank you very much. When Jimmy and I are together, we bring it. Regarding Neymar, I think the more interesting discussion is if Neymar is better than Rivaldo, not just talent, but career and impact on teams they play. Jimmy, what do you think?
So Rivaldo, for me, fits in the same category as Neymar a little bit. He has had this illustrious career, though Neymar hasn't won a World Cup yet, Rivaldo has. I would say that famous dive that Rivaldo had where he got hit like in the leg and then fell down and grabbed his face in the corner flag. I think it was a World Cup game, maybe against
like South- he was shot, like he was like in an episode of The Wire and he was just shot.
I honestly feel like that tainted his career in a lot of different ways. And I actually think what hurts Neymar too is social media, right? So now they can turn your actions into a meme. And now, you know, when he was rolling around in the 2018 World Cup, you know, somebody grabbed it and he's rolling around all over the world, you know, and it just, it's super funny, but it probably doesn't do much for his reputation. And I think that hurts both of those players. So Rivaldo, yes, I think he should be in the conversation. An excellent player. I got to play against him back in January when everything was still normal at this little five-a-side thing. Him and Danielson were on the same team. And I just couldn't believe.
Amazing.
First of all, I couldn't believe how big these guys were. They're like, they're big dudes, really long legs. And I just started, I tried to get the ball for Rivaldo and we both just started laughing. Like, I can't get anywhere near this guy, you know? I mean, he's just so good at holding the ball. All those guys are. They're so world-class. But yeah, Rivaldo should be in the conversation. He could do it. Had a magic left foot, good on set pieces, and could beat you in so many different ways. But I'm still with you. I think R9 Ronaldo might be my favorite of all time. I think Ronaldinho still at his peak was better than both of those guys, Rivaldo and Neymar. And then Pelé, I think, is untouchable. Maybe he's not even involved in this conversation. But Garrincha as well. Like, those guys are the old school guys. I'd say with kind of the modern game, I'd say Ronaldinho still. Or R9 was probably my number one.
Yeah, I concur. I'm not going to add too much. I would add just Romario to that conversation. But in terms of Rivaldo, I actually replied to Alex on Twitter. Thank you so much for the question. And the same things that you're talking about. The only thing that I would say, as you said, you know, Rivaldo's won a World Cup. He was a runner-up in 98 as well. He won three titles in La Liga. He's played, you know, with Olympiacos, a Champions League with Milan. So, you know, he has this overall thing. And as I mentioned yesterday, there's a World Cup in there. Okay. I know that it's a cliched argument, but there's a World Cup in there. Okay, and that's major. All right, moving on to another question from a very good friend, a Villa fan, Tom Fornelli. Tom Fornelli from CBS wanted to send the cue. And we're going to come to Serie A. And it's a long-time listener. Well, I'm glad that you're a long-time listener. First-time questioner. Should Serie A be thrown in prison for what it's doing to Napoli? I'll hang up and listen. He's obviously talking about the 3-0 win that was awarded to Juventus because Napoli wasn't going to travel because obviously of coronavirus positive test infections. What do you think, Jimmy?
I think that's a harsh assessment from Serie A to punish them. Obviously, everybody agreed to a certain set of rules prior to the season starting, I'm sure, with regard to these types of situations. So they probably knew going in that this was what was going to happen. I'd like to think that there is a middle ground somewhere, especially between these two clubs in particular, because they could be vying for the Scudetto once again, even though Juve is looking to be one of the favorites. Once again, no big surprise there. Hopefully Inter Milan takes them down. But Napoli could do it too. I don't know. It's unfortunate that there was this breakdown in communication between everybody. Like, they couldn't find a resolution that could please everybody. It was very black or white. And I feel like with COVID, you got to let some gray seep in. You got to have some plan Bs and plan Cs that are going to kind of appease everybody, especially in a competition that's as prestigious as Serie A.
Yeah, listen, yes, they should go. What, are you kidding me? Like, especially Italy, one of the first countries in Europe to be struck by this. You know how much you have gone through. Napoli's doing the right thing by not showing up because there's, hello, a pandemic, and you're going to punish them for it? You can't even think, well, maybe we can play this game later in the schedule? Are you joking? To your point, yes, we need more communication here, but it's absolutely insane. Napoli did the right thing, and they got punished. It's just,
I mean, they got proven right, too, because some Juve players have tested positive. Right. Now, whether Cristiano got that, you know, on the international break and Weston McKennie. I mean, Weston McKennie didn't go on an international break, right? So it's, I don't know. I mean, I think they've been proven right that some of Juve's players have tested positive.
Yeah, it's unbelievable they got punished for this. And yes, they should go to prison. All of them. Ridiculous. I want to thank everybody for joining episode 2. Jimmy C, James Bench, always my fellas. Jimmy, thank you so much. And I know that you'll be back very soon. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Awesome as always.
That's it for today. Thank you so much, everybody. We will be back on Sunday night to recap all this action. Don't forget to follow Que Golazo Pod on Twitter and leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Que Golazo, a daily CBS soccer podcast. We will see you on Sunday night. Enjoy your beautiful football.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.